The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Welcome to the First Cut Podcast, AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Everything you need to know for this week's betting and fantasy action. And as we do every Tuesday to talk through this with me, I'd like to welcome in Greg Ducharme. Welcome, sir. How was your Super Bowl?
Oh, well, you know, I saw the second half, which is rare for me. It seemed to me like the Super Bowl was over earlier this year. I don't know. Like, it wasn't that bad for me to stay up for the whole thing. Normally, I feel like I'm drained by the time the game ends. So it might have just been the circumstances outside of it. Maybe because I missed the first half, it was a completely different Super Bowl year for me, but it was really good to see the second half, I'll tell you that. And it was an exciting game, and I'm happy with the outcome.
Yeah, I mean, we got a good game, right? I mean, that's kind of what I wanted. I don't have a dog in this fight, so I just wanted to see action. I wanted to see a good game. I thought the Niners were going to do it there for a while. But yeah, I mean, okay, I'll tell you. When I moved from the East Coast to the West Coast, like literally the best thing about living on the West Coast
TV.
Is that, oh my God, sports. Yeah. I mean, the Super Bowl, I don't know what time it was. It was over at like 8:30, something like that, maybe even earlier. And I was just like, oh, I still got time to do stuff before I have to go to bed.
I mean, you got all day. I've always envied the Pacific Standard Time. I look at that and I am so jealous. I mean, I guess things start early, but for me, like, I'm an early riser, and getting stuff, staying up really late for me to watch a sporting event is always hard. It's easy for me to get up early. It's hard for me to stay up late to watch a sporting event. Maybe that's because I have to get up early, but I'm very envious of you and your sports consumption.
And what we get is basically, like, by the time I wake up, like, PGA Tour action has started. Like, it's off and running. Like, I've got no time to sit around and wait. Even, like, you know, Sunday football, I don't have to wait till 1 o'clock. 10 a.m. after breakfast, we're watching football. So, yeah, it is definitely top-notch. I highly recommend it. All right. Let's talk golf. So before we jump into this week's AT&T Pebble Beach, which has the history, it's a unique event, it's got the pro-am aspect of it, let's take a second to go over last week's waste management. You and Kyle on the Sunday night show, awesome job at kind of going over what this means for Webb, what this means for Tony Finau. So if you haven't listened to that, highly recommend going back and listening to it. But for us, we were kind of right on a lot of things. I mean, Webb was someone that we sat here and we talked about and we kind of beat our chest over and said, that's a pretty good price. And you know what? He goes out and rewards
us. Yeah, Webb is incredible. I didn't expect him to win this tournament. I expected him to do what he always does and probably finish somewhere in the top five.
The fact right, second
right,
place.
Yeah, he's second place Webb, it seems. Now he's changed that narrative. It's really impressive. What's also interesting to me, like, there's been a couple guys, Tony Finau, Ricky Fowler, are guys that we've kind of talked about in the light of they always finish T5, right? They're good players with good finishes that don't win. And Webb, who was kind of, since the Players' Championship in 2018, he was kind of doing that. He was like pulling a Ricky and a Finau, but we didn't view him, at least I didn't view him in that light, for a number of reasons. And the reason is what he does on Sundays. Webb's Sunday scoring average is phenomenal. I mean, it's under 68 this year. It was third on tour last year. He plays great on Sundays. He just has gotten beat. And that's when the notion of it's really hard to win on the PGA Tour really shines through. It's hard to win on the PGA Tour because of guys like Webb that aren't afraid to go shoot 65 on Sunday, or 64 on Sunday, or whatever it takes. They're unafraid. And so that makes it really hard for guys like Tony, guys like Ricky to get the job done, guys who have a little bit more challenging of a time on Sunday, as good as they are. Sunday's just a hard day for them. Webb's not that way. So it was really exciting to see him get the job done. I felt bad for Tony, but I think Tony will be fine. I don't think it's going to scar him or anything.
Yeah, the fact of actually winning is so interesting. And our buddy Will Haskett, him and I go back and forth on Twitter about this all the time, where basically like Webb Simpson's strokes gained numbers, how good they've been, you'd think he would have won more since just like the 2018 Players Championship. And actually Tony Finau's the same way. And it's just like someone always seems to best them. This week that, you know, both of them get into the playoff and both of them have been running below expectation for what we would expect out of wins. But you're right. I mean, we were here a couple weeks ago where we were reading off, Justin Thomas's like ridiculous stat line and he had like 3 wins in 7 starts or like something crazy like that. And then we were looking at Webb's and it was like 3 seconds in 7 starts, which is also insane. Like that's also insane. He lost to one guy 3 times, but we don't, like, our brains can't compute it as great as what we saw, you know, like Justin Thomas.
If Justin Thomas had the stat line of Webb Simpson, I think we would talk about Justin differently than we talk about Webb. Justin yeah. would be getting, I think, more praise than Webb gets for his play. And part of this, part of the reason is, see, look, like, let's go back to Tony Finau and Webb Simpson. To me, you look at their stat lines, there's a hole in Webb Simpson's game. And there's a hole in Tony Finau's game. For Webb Simpson, it's distance. That's it. I mean, the strokes gained off the tee, that statistic has a major lean towards distance for a number of reasons. I'm not saying that that makes it a bad stat. It just has a major lean towards distance, for a number of reasons. And Webb has, I call it built in. Can you improve your distance? Yes, you can increase your distance. Look at Cameron Tringale, Bryson DeChambeau, a number of players who have, Webb actually has increased his distance.
Yeah.
But, sure. but he is at it, from a clubhead speed perspective, at a disadvantage when he walks to the first tee. You look at Tony Finau and the hole in his game is his putting. And he's not a great putter. Statistically over time, that's the weakness for him. And you'll hear it talked about all the time. If Tony Finau could putt, he'd win every tournament. And there's probably 15 guys on the PGA Tour.
I was going to say, that's a lot of guys on that list.
Webb is not on that list. Webb has figured out a way to get it done with the putter. So the skill set that Webb Simpson has, to me, is I look at it with an elevated light. I think he is more skilled because he overcomes the distance that he does not have, and he does it on every golf course. Now, distance is a skill, yes, but to me, it's a skill that is it changes less often week to week. You're not going to have a week on the PGA Tour where all of a sudden you've lost your distance. Whereas you can have a week on the PGA Tour where you lose your short game or you can't seem to hit you're not sharp with your irons or your putting is inconsistent. Distance seems to always be there. So when Webb is at that disadvantage, he's at that disadvantage every week on the PGA Tour. It makes what he does week in and week out, it makes the consistency that he's shown us that much more impressive to me.
Well, that's actually a good segue into a guy I also want to tip my cap about, because that's what we talk about, where I love these guys who hit it well and they putt poorly, because one week they're going to catch a fire putter. Like, it's hard to go the other way. Luke Donald or Wes Bryan is not going to wake up and for 4 rounds hit his driver like Dustin Johnson. It's not going to happen. But is Benny Ahn going to be the best putter in the field 1 week? Like, maybe. That is much more likely to happen. And speaking of which, Benny Ahn, one of these tee to green guys that cannot seem to get the putter down or get the ball in the hole with his putter, ends up in a T9. We went back and forth on Benny, and I'll tell you what, I mean, a great finish. I loved it. I had bet him top 5, so he actually kind of disappointed me a little bit, but really good showing. I love this kid.
I do too, man. I really do. I enjoy watching Ben on play. A great ball striker, but he still continues to give me concern. I know this was one of the guys we disagreed on last week. He gives me concern. Like that T9, it could have in a heartbeat gone the other way and been a T39 or a miscut
easily.
And so it just gives me that pause. The guys, like you said, the guys that are great ball strikers, they kind of have these built-in skill sets. And what I mean by that is what we just explained with Webb Simpson. It's not going to change as much day to day. typically speaking. Those guys I really like too, but with Ben on, I don't see the putter getting hot from a technique perspective. It feels like it's too much luck. It doesn't feel like the putts aren't just going in. It feels like he's hitting cut putts and the ball's jumping off the face and it's spinning. And to me, it's like he's one of those guys. Hideki's kind of one of those guys too, where they almost have to make a technique change if they really want to improve their putting over time. And I just haven't seen that happen. So, unless they're at a venue like Hideki at the Waste Management, where he's just, this week was the worst week he possibly could have had. And I think it was like, what, a T16 or something.
Yeah. He charged up the leaderboard. Yeah.
That's like the worst he can do there. I think it's in fact his worst finish there. So, unless it's at a course with great history like that, I'm not crazy about those guys. Tony Finau can actually hit some good putts. He hits good putts that don't go in a lot. So it's a little bit of a different story. The statistics with these kind of players, you got to get away from a little bit, and there's a little more eye test involved for me.
This week, AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. We know the course, but that will not be the only course that we see. Pebble Beach will be the host course for this week, but we're getting another course rotation. So we've got a 3-course rotation in stock for this week. Pebble Beach, Spyglass Hill, and Monterey Peninsula. Greg, different than what we saw just a few weeks ago at the American Express, where that 3-course rotation is some of the easiest courses on the PGA Tour. All three of these courses played above average in terms of difficulty, meaning they were more difficult than the PGA Tour average last season. So I don't think we're going to see 30 under par here.
I don't either. There's a couple major differences. One, we're going to have some rough. It's not going to be it's likely not going to be U.S. Open rough. That's not what I would expect, but it's at the same time it's not dormant rough. It's not no rough like we get in the desert. The other key difference between the American Express and the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am is there's weather. You're right on the Pacific Ocean. It's a little up farther north than say Torrey Pines where you are. And the weather is a factor and it can change in a hurry. And you almost get into like open championship like conditions because you're right on the coast. Not quite as extreme, but weather is definitely a factor. You get some heavy fog in the morning. It can lift in the afternoon. It can change the distance you hit your golf ball. You have some really small greens, especially at Pebble Beach. I mean, these greens are really small and surrounded by rough and they slope and they're hard to hit. So you have to be really precise on these golf courses. And all of them are the same way. You have to be really precise. Spyglass Hill offers a tremendous challenge. I don't know so much about Monterey Peninsula. I don't know as much about, each of the holes out there, but I'll tell you, it's no gimme. But Spyglass and Pebble are, those two courses are particularly challenging.
And what you can actually get here some years is where the weather's kind of crappy in one of these courses, but the sun is shining at another one of them. You can get some really kind of crazy things going on. So the order in which you play them in, I haven't checked the weather forecast for this week, but it might be important, which kind of leads us into our little snippet of advice that we want to cover each week. And for this week, for me, weeks with a course rotation, when I look at the betting board, I like to do it in event. You won't see me putting a bunch of bets down before the tournament because the books are a little late to catch up. And this is exactly what we saw at the American Express with Andrew Landry, where basically he was, I don't know, tied for the lead or up near the top of the leaderboard, but he had the Nicholas tournament course still to play while everyone else was headed to the host course, PGA National. And it was like, well, wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense. He's going to have a chance to shoot like 6, 7, 8 under par tomorrow. And that's eventually what he ended up doing. And he gave himself a pretty good cushion. So the way that I like to do this, Greg, is very little up front. Let's start to see how these courses play out. You're not going to miss out on too many big odds if you wait, I don't know, 36 or 54.
So when you look at this, I know for me, I think that the most difficult courses are Pebble, of course, And I'm sorry, and Spyglass Hill. I think those are the two most challenging courses. What's the data saying? Is there a big advantage here? Are we trying to get guys that have a Saturday round at Monterey Peninsula? Are we looking in anything like that? Kind of like Andrew Landry had the Nicklaus course, as you just mentioned, and we said on Friday night, hey, Landry's probably the guy that's going to make a move. He has the advantage here with the courses. Is there one, do you think it's that noticeable? Do you think it's that extreme this week?
So as of right now, and based on what we know from last year, Pebble Beach is kind of like significantly harder. So if you have someone who is in contention and they've already played Pebble Beach, like that would be a good sign. Now, what I think we kind of, I don't want to say we messed it up, but even just more recently at the American Express, the three courses were not that much different. Like the Nicklaus Tournament course played much easier than even we had expected, and we knew it was going to play easy. So I think after we watch, you know, the first round and even the second round and get an idea for what the difference between the three courses are, like we'll be able to just absolutely, you know, slobber knock Saturday and Sunday bets because we'll have so much more.
So you're a fan of these three course tournaments.
I am not necessarily a fan of them because they're hard to watch. They're hard to follow. You don't get a lot of data. You don't have a lot of cameras on the non-host courses, but I think they present a really compelling, advantage to people who are paying attention.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think if you're betting, not necessarily in fantasy golf, but if you're betting, you know, like your 36 hole bet, you're going to hedge your bets after the weekend. It does present extreme opportunity, which I think that's an interesting strategy for a week like that. But I'm with you for a fantasy golf perspective, for watching, it's a little challenging. I mean, it's hard to know which day they're going to, especially this one. The Amex is a little bit easier because it's what I call dome golf. This isn't anything but dome golf, right? You don't know what you're going to get with the weather. So definitely a little bit more challenging this week for DFS.
Yeah, someone's going to be like 8 under through 10 at one of these courses, and we're going to be like, how are they doing that? Like, did they hole out three times?
Right.
Or like, what's going on here? All right, so let's do this. We're going to jump into the DraftKings and the betting board. But first, let's take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS, here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Finally, not letting you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, we're back, Greg. So let's hop right into the top of the DraftKings player pool. There are 5 golfers over $10,000, led by Dustin Johnson coming back from Saudi Arabia, Patrick Cantlay, Paul Casey, Jason Day, and Brant Snedeker. I got to say, this is kind of a weak field. You know, we've got DJ at the top, we have Cantlay here, but when we get to the next tier of golfers, it's going to drop off pretty significantly. And I think I'm like, with that in mind, I'm grabbing one of these guys in my lineups and I'm probably betting one of them because I think they suck up a lot of like the total win equity that comes out of this tournament. What do you think?
Well, I think you bring up a great point with win equity. A number of these players have some things that are very, very interesting. It's definitely, this group of players definitely catches your attention. There are a couple of things that I find very interesting. Dustin Johnson at 11,600 seems a little high. I know he had a great finish in Saudi Arabia. He's been playing really well. All the numbers are going to say DJ's a great pick. I mean, look at his course history here. 2009, yeah. He came in first. 2010, he came in first. So he's got 2 wins. He's got 2014, tied second. 2015, tied fourth. 2017, a solo third. 2018, tied second. He has these 2 finishes, last year T45, 16 T41, and those are just, they give me just a little bit of pause. Maybe I'm off base here. It's hard to imagine that DJ is going to finish T45 again for a second week in a row, but I haven't seen enough out of him to really have a lot of trust. I know he came in tied seventh at the Century Tournament of Champions. I know that that he played really well coming in second in Saudi Arabia, another where he was the defending champion. But I just I have this shadow of doubt with DJ. Do you think I'm off base?
I think you're a little off base. I'm probably I shouldn't say that. I'm probably just more warm on DJ than you are, but I agree with the sentiment of $11,600 in this field is going to become very difficult to roster. I kind of want this both ways, where I want to grab one of these guys above $10,000, but I don't want to pay down for anybody like under $7,000 because I think the field gets really, really weak. So I'm stuck in this situation where I want to have it both ways, and I'm thinking, okay, if I want to do that, if I need to get one of these guys over $10,000 and I can spend, let's say, $1,100 less for someone like Paul Casey, I'm intrigued by that because Casey, for all intents and purposes, has played more golf around the world than almost anybody. Like, he did not stop playing after the Tour Championship last year. He went right over, played a bunch on the Euro Tour. He won the Porsche European Open. Just a few weeks ago, he had a fifth place finish at the Australian Open. He only has two starts here, last two years at Pebble Beach, eighth and a second place last year. Like, when I think of a guy who, like, you know, these are small greens. You're going to need to be able to hit your irons well. I know the closer that Casey gets to the greens, they, you know, kind of gets a little wonky on him. But, like, I don't know. Place obviously seems to fit him, and I don't have to worry about where he's been for the last 6 weeks because he's been playing golf.
I agree. I think Paul Casey is an intriguing pick. And this is part of the reason why DJ, like, just to go back to DJ quick, it's not that I'm against DJ, it's not that I think DJ is going to have a poor week. I just, for the price that he is, and with the class that you have, between Brant Snedeker and Patrick Cantlay, including Paul Casey and Jason Day, with all of those players sitting there significantly cheaper, I just have a hard time pulling the trigger on DJ. It's just, there's just a shadow of doubt. And to me, at that, $11,600 price range, it's gotta feel like a lock for me. Like John Rahm last week felt like a lock for me. I'll pay for that. But this week, I don't know why. It's just a feel. This is kind of the hunch pool. If I have like a 5-star rating system on a player, you got course history, DJ checks that box. You got recent play, DJ checks that box. You got statistical stuff. DJ checks all the boxes and then some in that category. But there's these other areas, like, and it's just, it's kind of the hunch. And my hunch is fade DJ this week. I don't know why, but that's where I'm feeling. And part of the reason may be because Paul Casey's sitting right there, as you mentioned. Yeah. Great course history. He's got a very solid recent play. Not too exciting where it's like, is this just a hot streak? Right, tied 21st at the Amex. His statistics speak well to the golf course, as he said. I mean, 23rd strokes gained off the tee, 25th approach the green, 31st tee to green. The putting and short game are definitely, as you mentioned, concerning. But the last four winners at this golf course, if you look at their approach shot distance to pin or proximity to the hole, in 2019, Phil was second. In 2018, Ted Potter was tied third. In 2017, Jordan Spieth was ninth, and in 2016, Vaughn Taylor was third. So that just signifies to me that iron play is going to be very important on a course with small greens. Paul Casey, I really like, but Patrick Cantlay, I really like as well. He is a phenomenal iron player. Jason Day is a guy to me, and I know I'm sure you have some thoughts on him because he's the question mark for me. The recent history is phenomenal. Probably better than anybody who doesn't have a win, right? A T4 in 19, T2 in 18, T5 in 17, T11 in 16. I don't know what he was thinking that week. And then T15 a tied fourth, right? These are fantastic. Tied 16th at the Farmers last week. But the weakness in Jason Day's game is iron play. He kind of has a way of making up for it with short game, but that's like, it's an odd combination.
Well, I hate banking on that. I hate kind of banking on that short game stuff when, I don't know what to do with these two, Jason Day and Brant Snedeker. Day, you're right. He's lost strokes on approach in five straight starts, which is absolutely terrifying. Somehow he got around Torrey the last time we saw him for a 16th. And you're right. The course history is amazing. So I don't know. I'll probably avoid both of these guys, but like, you've got to pick either Jason Day or Brant Snedeker. Where are you going here?
Man, I got to say Jason Day. I think Jason is too talented of a player to perform the way that he's been performing. I think he's just too good. And I know this goes beyond statistics. I think it's time for Jason Day to step up and put together a great tournament. And I think this is a place where he could do it. So he does have some doubts. It almost reminds me a little bit of Justin Rose in 2019 at Torrey, where he didn't really know where it was going, but everything just kind of worked out for him. And so I just have this is back to the hunch again, which I don't like using, but I have enough data here with Jason Day. That course history for 5 years, five straight years, it's enough to make me feel really good about it. As for Brant Snedeker, I feel like you're relying on the putting and the short game even more than Jason Day. And I like Brant. He's priced too high. If Brant were in the, 9.7, 9.8 range, I'd be all over him. But up at that price, I just don't have quite the confidence. I have more confidence in Jason Day than Brant Snedeker.
I will tell you that I have already bet to win one of these five golfers. Would you like to take a guess at who that might be?
So these five, are these the five in the 10K plus range? DJ,
yeah, the five
Cantlay,
in the 10K
Casey,
plus range.
Day, Snedeker. You already have a bet in. I'm going to guess Patrick Cantlay.
It is not, but I almost pulled the trigger on Cantlay. I did actually end up betting Dustin Johnson, and I got him at 6.5 to 1. And I will tell you why. That number, 6.5 to 1, basically the same odds we got on Jon Rahm last week. I think he was like 7 to 1. And Rory was like 7 or 8 to 1 at Torrey Pines, which to me are much worse situation. Like the field is much deeper. It is much more talented than when we get to AT&T Pebble Beach and somewhat like nothing against Brandon Grace, but when Brandon Grace is like the 10th favorite in a field, that's a weak field. Or when Daniel Berger is like in the top 15, that's a weak field. So I actually very rarely will bet someone this short because it's hard for my brain to, like, they have to win so often, but I actually already bet this one because of, if I'm going to pay the 7 to 1 or the 7.5 to 1, I'd rather have it here than other places.
Well, so just because, and see, this is interesting, Rick. This is why I wanted to talk to you today. So you have, you're betting this because, like, this is the best odds of a 6 to 1 odds that you're going to get, right? You understand what I'm saying? It's like.
Right. Yeah. Basically, I mean, it's like this number comes up a handful of times a year. We'll probably see it like 10 times because there'll be like a stud in like kind of a weak field. But then we saw it at Waste Management and Farmers. And it's like, well, I'm definitely not paying it there. So like I'm happy to pay it here. I'm happy to pay it like RBC Canadian. Like when there's like one stud who should run away with it, like that's.
And you're willing to take that chance. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's almost like if DJ wins and you don't bet him, you're gonna kick yourself. And I can understand that. This is what we did, you and I both, with Ricky Fowler at the Amex. Like, he's the class of the field. There's nobody else jumping off the page at us. So, and there's probably not another time where we're gonna be all over Ricky. So let's just take him here. I can understand that. I have, again, the traveling back from Saudi Arabia thing
scares me.
Yeah, it gives me pause, and it's a hunch. I know he's playing great. He played great. He's the most talented player in the field, no doubt. But I just have a little bit of pause for DraftKings. You know what? I don't hate it for betting to win. It'd probably be a small
investment. I think that's where – that was where I said. I said, okay, I'm not going to play him on DraftKings, but I'm just going to bet him, and that'll be my, like, my hedge against, my DraftKings lineups stinking is if DJ wins it, I have to bet him.
Yeah, you got to get something because he's a kick-yourself guy. I'm with you.
Right. All right. Next section here. The 9,000s. Matt Kuchar leads the way. Matthew Fitzpatrick. So we're already in the Matthew Fitzpatrick. Yeah. That's where this field goes. Phil Mickelson, Brandon Grace, Graham McDowell coming off the win in Saudi Arabia, Victor Hovland, and Jordan Spieth. Wow. There are like three guys in here that I'm like, I like to pick on these guys. Like, I never play these guys. I never roster these guys. I think this, outside of maybe Hovland, who I love and I know he's not playing that well, like, you will not see me be early on Spieth. You will definitely not see me be using Phil. I think Phil's kind of just washed. I know he came in, third in Saudi Arabia, yeah, and you're paying for the fact that he's now back here as the defending champion and that great course history, but we have seen so little from Phil to be optimistic that, like, I can't.
Man, it's not enough for me. I mean, so the course history you mentioned is great. He's played it 23 times. 5 wins, yeah, 2 seconds, 2 thirds, 11 top 10s. So he's top 10 in about half the time that he plays here. But this is the one that I found. And the recent play, which is kind of another bucket we always look at, has not been, it's been awful aside from Saudi Arabia, yep, last week. So it was 1 week enough to make you say, Phil figured something out. He's a Hall of Famer for a reason. He's extremely talented, and it's very possible that he has figured something out. But this is the thing that's keeping me away from him, aside from the statistics and aside from my doubt in his recent play. He's won this tournament 5 times, as I said. His best finish in a year after a win is T21. And he just hasn't defended well. And I don't see enough to say Phil's going to defend well this year. I think this is the kind of year where he doesn't defend very well. So I'm with you 100%. I'm staying away from Phil. Victor Hovland is a guy that I really like. I really like Victor Hovland this week for a number of reasons. I think he's a phenomenal player, first and foremost. No doubt about it. Yeah. He is third in strokes gained, in proximity to the hole. I mentioned the statistics of the last 4 winners and their proximities to the hole. He was also the low am last year at the U.S. Open. I think it's a good course for him. I think he's a really good player. And I think that price is, I think it's a good price considering the field.
So I will tell you that this is the best price you'll probably get on Victor, and also in terms of the betting market, he's 35-1 most places. Other scenarios we've seen Victor in, he was 18-1 in Mayakoba, he was 14-1 at Greenbrier, he was 20-1 at the CJ Cup. Greenbrier's probably even a worse field, but like, I think this is the buy low opportunity on Victor because he's very reasonably priced. If you want to bet him, I can't hate you for that. This is seemingly a pretty good spot for him. So I'm in on buying low on Hovland. But how about, like, did we just completely forget about Matt Kuchar, who won in Singapore 2 weeks ago, and then had a T16 at Waste Management last week? Like, shouldn't a guy who doesn't necessarily hit it very long off the tee, these are 3 of the shorter courses on the PGA Tour. They kind of have natural landing spots. Is this, I mean, I know his history isn't that great here, but is this a Kuchar track, or should it be a Kuchar track?
I see where you're coming from, right? It makes sense. The thing about Matt Kuchar is there's a lot of really good courses for him because he keeps the ball in front of him. It actually reminds me a little bit of a Webb Simpson. He's that kind of short neck giraffe that has the built in hole of distance, but the rest of their game is pretty solid. But for Kuchar and these really small greens, I just have some questions about, they're a little slopey. I don't think he putts the greens extremely well. He's a good putter. I wouldn't consider him a great putter. And I just worry about him. Here's the other thing about Matt Kuchar that concerns me, and it's weather. Kuch tends to struggle when the weather gets bad. We've seen it a number of times over the past. For a guy that doesn't have tremendously high clubhead speed, he does hit the ball very high, and in wind and in rainy conditions. We've seen a lot of uncharacteristic high rounds out of Matt Kuchar. And so that, I think, has part of the reason. I think weather coming in gives him some trouble. But I wouldn't rule him out as a guy that can have a good week. I just, again, you're talking about he's 9,900. He's right there basically with Brant Snedeker, and he's in just kind of in no man's land for me. Am I going to get him on my team? Is he going to be my top dog at that price? And what you've already talked about with the really low end guys, is Matt Kuchar going to be your top dog? Is he going to be your anchor for this team? I don't think so. I just have doubts on Kuchar and in the price that he is. Again, if he was 8,900, I'd be all over it, but no, I don't really see the trust in him this week.
The case that you're making is one that I naturally, it just kind of hit me. So, I mean, we're talking, and in terms of betting odds, we're talking about, you know, Kucher's 27 to one. Some of the guys in this range are 33 to one. Spieth is 40 to one. Like, that's the range of odds that we're looking at. And to me, this is a dead zone because these are guys that are generally, some of these guys are usually 50, 60, 70 to one. But this week, this field, everybody moves up. And what we've kind of seen out of this event, it feels like, either a top dog wins it, DJ wins it, Jordan Spieth wins it, whatever, or someone out of nowhere, like a Vaughn Taylor or a Ted Potter Jr. or whatever, wins it. Not a lot of winners come from like this second tier of golfers, and to me, it's like a dead zone.
I tend to agree. I do, like I said, I do like Hovland. Brendan Grace intrigues me. We were all over him last week for the Waste Management Phoenix Open. He came in tied ninth. So that definitely has my interest a little bit. He came in tied, well, actually that was Graham McDowell who came in tied 18th last year, but Grace has my interest, but I'm not really there yet, especially betting to win. I don't see him as a guy to bet to win. Graham McDowell just won. If he had came in third last week, I'd be much higher on him. But he did come in tied fourth at the Sony. He did win the U.S. Open here in 2010. He is on the PGA Tour this year, ninth in strokes gained approach the green. He is a phenomenal putter. He is a phenomenal player when it comes to bad weather. Graham McDowell is a guy that seems to me to have a rising interest in the game. For a couple of years there, I felt like he was maybe involved more in his beer company, kind of distracted a little bit from the golf course, focusing on other things. I almost thought Graham McDowell was done, but I feel like he has a new drive, like a new will that started last year at the Canadian Open. Like, he wanted to play Port Rush. He got to Port Rush. I think that inspired him, and I think he realized, hey, I can still play. So I'm very interested in Graham McDowell. Traveling back from Saudi Arabia and coming off of a win in another country gives me a little bit of concern. I know that sounds strange. He just won. Why would you be concerned? How often is it that Graham McDowell wins 2 weeks in a row? I don't know, but I feel like his form is in real good shape. The question is, was last week the peak, or was last week just a step in the right direction?
Yeah, golf is the only sport in which we penalize the guy who was the best in the world the week before, right. but historically it's been true. Like, it's hard.
There's a reason
for it. It's really hard. Yeah, it's hard to back it up. All right, 8K range. I won't read them all off, but it starts with Daniel Berger and goes down to Kurt Kitayama at a flat 8,000. For me, this is where you really start to see what is underneath, you know, this field here. And there's guys of all different sorts. The ones that stand out to me specifically, $8,300 Max Homa. I think this is a situation where, kind of like Tom Hoagie we talked about a couple weeks ago. It's like, okay, Tom Hoagie's going to play well for like three or four straight weeks. I don't know when it's going to start. I don't know when it's going to end. I feel kind of similar to Max Homa here, where he's got a ninth at the Farmers, a sixth at the Waste Management, and you're looking up going, oh man, like, can he get this one more? Can he do this one more week? And I'm hoping the answer is yes, because I really like him. He finished 10th place last year, and three of his top 11 rounds in his career, in terms of strokes gained, have come at this tournament. So I'm hoping it's a place that brings him really good vibes, and he's playing well. And to me, those are the two things that I want to intersect.
Yeah, I mean, you got to like the fact that he's kind of a California kid, right? He was born in California. He lives in California. He went to Cal Berkeley. I think those are definitely factors that you like. He hasn't missed a cut in a really long time. So you go back through these rounds, like, really nice play at the Farmers, really nice play last week, as you mentioned. These are things you like about Max Homa. From a statistical standpoint, there's not really much to like there. He's kind of below average in a lot of these areas. But I that doesn't mean that you can't have a great week. So Max Homa's a guy I like. Again, it's this kind of a field gives you a lot of pause. So where else are you going to go? Are you going to go to Rafa Cabrera Bayo? Maybe, but boy, is that a safe, that's like such a safe, comfy pick that probably leads to a T35, right? I don't see any gold at the end of that rainbow. Kevin Kisner, I kind of feel like the same way. He has probably more win equity than anybody else in this group. But
would agree.
But again, maybe that's where you go. To me, there's two guys. Homa, I like Homa. I do like Homa. I agree with you there. Kisner, I have questions about, but I like his ceiling. The other guy that has really interested me is Alex Noren.
Yes.
And I'll tell you why. When I first was going through this list, I kind of wrote him off. I was like, Alex Noren, oh man, he's been playing terrible. But I, for some reason, I looked at him because I almost thought he's at 8,700. There's got to be, I know it's not the strongest field, but there's got to be a reason why. Because if he's playing anything like he did last year, this is horrible. So let me look into this a little bit. Well, since the Bermuda Championship over there, he came and tied 15th there, tied 10th at the RSM, tied 32nd at the Sony, tied 14th at the Amex. And the thing I really like about this is in those 12 rounds of those four, I guess that's actually 16 rounds. And of those 16 rounds, only one of them has been in the 70s, which I really like. He's shooting in the 60s a lot. And then you go to the statistics on him, and he's 18th in strokes gained approach, 9th strokes gained tee to green, and 8th strokes gained around the green. We mentioned Jason Day, a guy with a great short game who gets it done. We know that iron players have, or guys who had great weeks with the irons have gotten it done. That is kind of a combination that makes me feel really good. And I know that he's been a great putter. This year hasn't been the best putting year, but he's what I would call a gifted putter. So Alex Noren really has my interest. Are you worried at all that he's never played here before?
Yes and no. I mean, this is a weird tournament. It's the pro-am aspect of it, the three-course rotation, the dragging around an amateur for 6.5 hours. Like, we don't know how these guys like this or don't like this. So, like, the fact that he's never played here might be good. I have no idea. But I will say, he's made 10 straight cuts worldwide, 15 of his last 16. I tend to agree. I mean, I don't think I will have a lot of exposure to any one golfer in this entire range, but I'm sprinkling, Alex Noren, Kevin Kisner, Max Homa, and maybe a little Russell Knox, who I think he finished T16 last week. I had Russell Knox as a 10-1 top Euro bet last week, and he finished one shot behind John Rahm. And I was like, no, oh my gosh, I almost cashed this 10-1 bet on Knox. But I was following him, so I was like, oh, he's playing.
He has been playing.
Yeah, and he's got a 15th 2 years ago and a 14th last year at Pebble. So those are probably the four guys that I'm concentrating on. But I do say kudos to Alex Noren, because remember, he was like 11th in the world not that long
ago. I know, and that's why I like him so much. I feel like he's coming back, and I feel like last year was, to me, my prediction is that is the exception, not the rule. I think he just got into a bad place last year, and he may have been injured. I mean, I don't know what happened, but it was like extremely bad play. And I just have a feeling that's not who Alex Noren is. So I think you're going to see him come back with a good year this year, especially after looking into this a little bit. And why not start this week? I mean, he's a good bad weather player too. I don't see any reason why to. I just think he's too good to be down here in this range. The more I think about it, the more he stands out to me. He and Kisner are the two guys for me.
He not to go too off on a tangent here, but Noren's very interesting because even in this run of, like, you know, 10 straight cuts made, his official world golf ranking is dropping like a rock because his wins and stuff previous to that are all falling out. So I think his actual world rank number is going to get worse before it gets better. But like, this is definitely an upswing. Like, I would love to see him get back in, like, even the top 30 in the world. Like, that would be cool.
Yeah, maybe the Ryder Cup. I mean, I don't want to play against him. He'd be a great James Bond, by the way. If you're talking about James Bond as an actor, that's what Alex Noren, I think, would be a pretty good one.
I can get behind that.
There are three guys in that conversation. I think Alex Noren is a guy that I like, Henrik Stenson, and Adam Scott. I think those are the three James Bond PGA.
Yeah, Henrik Stenson's so cold-blooded. That'd be cool. That would be like a cool version of it. All right, 7,000. There are a lot of guys here. It starts at J.B. Holmes and Tom Hoagie at 7,900. It goes down to, I mean, there's a bunch of guys at 7,000 even, but we're talking Harold Varner, Cameron Tringale, Nick Taylor, those types of players. And this is where I'm like, oh crap. Like, okay, I played DJ or I played Casey and now I've got to find something here. And I don't know. I mean, I think that I would bank like, okay, so we kind of talked about this with Benny on a little bit last week. Lonzo Griffin's 7,200, and he's coming off literally the worst event he's ever played on tour, like, by far. He lost more strokes, like, basically for that tournament last week. It was twice his worst ever start before that. It was just, it's just so bad. And what I'm saying is, hey, we are now only, like, three weeks removed from Lonto being seventh at the Sony Open. We're, like, six starts removed from him winning in Houston. I don't think he has forgotten how to play golf, but that really bad week drives him down into 7,200 with Xinjun Zhang and Bo Hostler and all these other guys, and I like him compared to those guys.
See, this is where this game gets so hard, right? This is where, because again, like you said, Tom Hoagie, when is this run going to end, right? This is what we experience with Lonto Griffin. So you go back and look. And he was a very popular player to play. In fact, I played him at the Houston Open. He was my pick to win, and he pulled it off. The reason for that was he had four straight top 20 starts, and he was playing great golf. So it was like an easy, cheaper play. And then he continued it with the Bermuda. Then all of a sudden, Mayakoba tied 76, RSM cut. But he comes back this year with two nice weeks. And we're thinking, is Lonto Griffin really this good? His price is going way up. Is he really this good? Because there's some statistical things we really like about Lonto, too. A long hitter, really good putter. We like all those things. But now, in his last four rounds, you have a 76, 74, and a 78. I don't like anything about that. So you wonder, are these two bad weeks? Are these two courses that don't fit him? What is it that gives you any hope that this is going to change? So there's a reason for this price fall, and I wonder if this is Lonto kind of evening out. And I don't know if I can take that risk. The thing I will say too about this range is there are some what I call safety picks. I look at a guy like Scott Piercy and a guy like Cameron Tringale, and I think those are guys that are cut makers. Scott Piercy has great iron play. He's a guy that can get really hot with the irons. He's a guy in this range that I think has some real win equity. I think he's a guy that can go out and win, but I think he's pretty safe. I think Cameron Tringale as well is very safe, kind of like Rafa Cabrera-Bello, but at a much cheaper price, where he's probably going to play pretty well. He'll probably have your interest, but he probably won't get you a win. He probably isn't going to get you a top 10, but he'll be there. So that's the question. Do you go super risky in this area, or do you try to find somebody that's safe because you don't feel really good about anything?
Yeah, you know what? And I kind of wrote off this entire 7,000s, but the upper 7,000s, there are some names I'd certainly play here. You mentioned Scott Piercy, even like a Kevin Na or Von Taylor's not, I mean, he's won here before. He had a good stretch of golf, you know, earlier this year. Like, there are definitely some guys that I could get behind. I mean, even Patrick Rogers is 7,400. It's the Tom Hoagie effect. Okay. Two good weeks in a row for Patrick Rogers. Does he have a third in him? Historically, I don't know how often we've seen Patrick Rogers put three great tournaments together, but he does have a top 10 here 2 years ago. I think you're kind of throwing darts down here.
I couldn't agree more. So it makes me kind of go, well, these are where I want to get a guy that's just going to make a cut. I want to try to get a guy I like Cameron Tringale because it's safe and I feel like he could do well. If I can afford it, I might go with a Scott Piercy because I think there's a safety and a little bit of win equity there. So those are really the two areas that I'm looking at, and I don't really go much farther into that.
There are about a million golfers under $7,000, and if you thought the $7,000 range was bad, imagine what the $6,000 range looks like. I have a cheat sheet that just, you know, if it's red, if he missed the cut, you know, it's green if he made it, depending on where it's at. And like, as I scroll down, it's like red, red, red. Like, all I see is red on this thing, 'cause it's not a lot of great recent form, from any of these guys down here. But I'll tell you what, we talked about this, a handful of weeks ago. I think there's a couple of golfers that you can play, five or six times a year. And their names are, Brian Gay, and Zach Blair, places that generally distance is not going to kill you, and these are short courses. Distance is always going to be a benefit, but not necessarily a prerequisite around here. So Zach Blair is $6,700. He's someone that I might consider, but yeah, I this is the range I would want to avoid, Greg.
I agree. And that's part of the reason why with Dustin Johnson, I have a hard time. I don't know how you can get a solid lineup with DJ and not one of these guys. So you're in a position here where you're going to stretch. Now, I do understand your strategy. And Rick, I know you're a big risk taker, right? You've said many times before you want to win all the money, not some of the money, not double your money. So going on that strategy, it's not crazy to say that one of these guys is going to pop up. Question is who? What are you going to go on? Is there anything you can cling to? Like I look at myself in my role as an analyst here. I'm supposed to analyze what these players have done, where they, and give you a reason why, not just throw darts at a board and say, well, Luke Donald, this is going to be a great week for him just because I know the name. So it gives me a little bit of a hard time. Now, one guy, Sebastian Kaplan, is a guy that does interest me a little bit. A T6 at the American Express, a T21 at the Farmers Insurance Open. Not a great week at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, but he did shoot even par, which, you know, you can give him a, it's not like he shot a 79. So there's not, you know, it's not terrible. He is 84th in strokes gained putting. Okay, that's okay. He's 49th off the tee. He's got some distance. There's a little bit to cling to here, but quite frankly, not a lot. So I would say there's a little bit of recent form with him you could cling to. The one guy that I do like that's a huge risk, but I can cling to something here is Brandon Wu. He did make the cut at the U.S. Open last year. He's a young gun coming up out of Stanford. A California kid, and I've heard Johnny Miller say before, California kids win in California because you got to know how to putt the greens, and he does. So I like Brandon Wu in that sense. I like being early on him, but even at 6,900, I feel like he's too high. If he was 6,300, I'd play him because I do think he's going to be a wonderful player. I think this could be a really good week for him. He catches my eye, but again, do you think 6,900 is a little high for him?
I mean, I think all of these guys are, it's just the nature of this field that it feels like they're all overpriced, but I will say, and don't quote me on this, I think Brandon Wu was the second amateur in that U.S. Open last year behind Victor Hovland. Yeah. I believe that is true.
Yeah, he made the cut. He missed his graduation at Stanford.
That's right.
He made the cut. He came in tied 35th, and Hovland may have been tied 12th, I want to say.
12th, that is correct.
Pretty good play out of those two guys.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, you're right. When I'm down here, I look at, just a few specific skill sets. I say, as usual, give me the ball strikers. The one guy that stands out to me there is Doc Redman.
Yeah.
Who is $6,700. I mean, this guy is literally, hold on. Let me get this. Top 25. He's 23rd off the tee this year. He's 30th on approaches. Now, I will not quote his short game numbers because it is ugly, Greg, but, you know how I feel about that. He gets hot 1 week. Like, give me a couple of really, like, there's probably not another guy down here that is like top 25 in a skill set that I think is as important as either off the tee or
with Doc Redman. You're looking for a week. Like, I believe it was Rocket Mortgage last year. He came in second to Nate Lashley. Right.
And he made a run at the Open Championship.
Yeah. So
he was like top five in the Open Championship.
Right around the same time. So he's a popper, right? He's like it's like an Andrew Landry. You think he's going to play well over time, or do you think that's just a 1 week kind of a thing? So I have a hard time down in this range. I really do. I there's not a lot to cling to. I see what you're saying with Doc here, but again, I mean, it's the same story.
You were right. It was second at the Rocket Mortgage. It was a T20, which is still fine at the Open Championship. T18 at Wells Fargo the week before the Rocket Mortgage. So he can get on a little bit of a run. All right. Let's talk a little couple of bets, a couple of head-to-heads. The one that caught my eye, and we talked a little bit about these guys, so I kind of have an idea of where I think you're going here. But I saw one that was Paul Casey -120 versus Brant Snedeker -110. So almost a coin flip. You pay a little more juice on the Paul Casey side. What say you?
Brant Snedeker has been playing really well lately. He really has. And this is the kind of course where Brant Snedeker can do pretty well. But Paul Casey has been too, right? Paul Casey's been playing a lot, as you've said. He's been playing really well. This is a good course for him. I think Paul Casey embraces the amateur aspect of this tournament. I gotta say Paul Casey is a favorite for a reason in this one. It's a tough one, man. For me, it's almost like a coin flip. Like I said, in these matchup bets, I don't necessarily care too much about the odds. I try to find a guy that's going to win. It's hard for me to like Brant is playing great and I really like him this week. He's in no man's land a little bit for me price wise. Maybe this is the area where you take Brant Snedeker. I wouldn't hate you for it, but I'm going to take Paul Casey.
I'm also going to take Paul Casey and I'll tell you why. Snedeker, I like a lot, but he does not serve the purpose that I want him to serve for a head-to-head matchup because of how volatile he is. So even just the last, let's look at the last 2 weeks. He goes third place at the Farmers. He goes missed cut at the Waste Management. If he finished top five here, no one would be surprised. He misses the cut here last year, a place that he's won. His results tend to just be all over the place. You're going to have high finishes. You're going to have missed cuts. Paul Casey is like the lock of the century to top 20 every single event that he plays. And that doesn't mean he's going to win because we know Paul Casey's had issues winning. Yep. But when I'm betting against one other person and or one other golfer and you can give me the side that more consistently is going to finish in the top 20, because it doesn't matter if, you know, Casey finishes second if Snedeker beats him, right? I just want to have a chance at this. I don't want to have my guy play me out of a head-to-head matchup. So I'll go with the safer guy, which is like one of the few occasions that I do. And that guy,
I like that strategy. It makes a lot of sense. It's just the thing with Brant, he's hard to bet against, right? How many guys can say they shot 59 in a PGA Tour? I know it's a Wyndham. I know it's a completely different course, but he's that good. He's kind of like a Webb Simpson with an extremely good skill set. And it just makes you wonder. It gives me a little bit of pause, but I think your strategy is solid. I think it has merit and, I think you'll be right at the end of the week.
I hope so. Here's another thing I hope I will be right about. It's the one and done. So let me give you the standings here real quick. Our big boss, Eric K, leads the way with a million points, not dollars, million points, because he had John Rahm a couple of weeks ago, I believe at Torrey. I am in dead last. I've got 255,000. I'm right below Mark, who's in sixth. Kyle's in fifth. Producer Jacob is in fourth. You, Sir Greg, are in third with 577,000. So for me, the good news is I'm only $750,000 out of first, and there's a lot of golf to be played, but I got to get going here.
Yep.
So I am going to stick with the Paul Casey story, and I'm going to take Paul Casey this week. This is a very difficult decision for me. I think that if you – Like I can't burn DJ here, no matter how big of a favorite he is. Paul Casey, with the course history, the eighth and the second, and just how much he's played, how good he's played, he's been just fine all across the world. And I don't have a real natural other place to play him. Like, I guess I could play him at Valspar or maybe Travelers or something like that. But I'm not, like, dying to do so. So here is where I will stick my Paul Casey flag in the ground.
I like the pick. I completely agree with all of your points. I'm going to go a little bit of a different direction. As they say, you're in last place for a reason. So
that's exactly right. For sure. So you know what? Okay. Real quick. I had I'm in like three or four other, one and dones, and I had Webb Simpson in every one last week, except this one. Cause I wanted to needle, Mark and Kyle about using Gary Woodland. And it was so stupid. It backfired.
Yeah, it backfired. And that's the thing. Like, what's your reasoning for these? You got to work your way through these things. So it's not easy. The thing that kills me about your one and done season is the Justin Rose miscut. But anyway, let me get to mine here. I'm going to go with, this is a hard one for me too. I'm going to go with Jason Day, and I'm going to take Jason Day for a couple reasons. One, I feel really good about his course history. As we've mentioned before, his worst finish in the past five events is tied 11th. So, I really like that. Tied 16th at the Farmers last week. This is a good time of year for him, and he's a big name guy that I think could win majors, but I have doubts about his health. Right now, I feel like he's healthy. So while the iron's hot this week, this is the week for Jason Day. I'm going to take him, get him off the board. I'm going to go with my strategy so far, which has been safety first. I think this is a low-risk pick. It's going to keep me right there. And I know that this season is going to be determined in the majors and towards the end of the season. So Jason Day to me is a guy that is risky for his long-term success. I don't know what's going to be projected, but I feel really good about him in the recent form. I feel really good about him right now, and I feel like he's healthy. So I'm going to take him while he's healthy. Jason Day, mark it down.
I think you do a really good job of getting the natural fits. Hideki at Waste Management, Jason Day here. That is, in my opinion, a very safe, a very sound, a very solid approach, and it's proving to work. 577,000, third place for you.
Yeah, I'm right there. I'm sticking with the strategy, and like I said, and like you've said, there's a lot of golf left, so I want to make sure that I'm there, and I want to make sure that I have all the weaponry that I need when it's time to really make a push.
All right. Greg, that'll do it, my friend. Any parting words for AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am before we
head out? I can't wait to see it. I cannot wait to see. I love Pebble Beach. I love Spanish Bay. I love watching these golf courses. So I'm extremely excited, and I'm excited for Friday night. I'm excited to get together and go over the first half of the tournament.
Who's the celebrity you're most looking forward to see? Is it Boomer from ESPN? Is it Wayne Gretzky? Who's out there that you're excited
for? Wayne Gretzky is a big one for me, the great one. I grew up hockey. I played hockey for basically my whole life up until college. So love Wayne Gretzky. I was actually at Wayne Gretzky's last game at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, wow.
So a huge fan of the great one. The Manning brothers are both playing.
I didn't know
I'm
that.
Excited
okay,
to
that's
see
good.
That Peyton and Eli. Eli in his first year without a job as an unemployed guy, right? So
hopefully he's been practicing. He's got a lot more time on his hands, I guess.
He's such a cool guy. I have so much respect for the Manning brothers, their personalities and their abilities on the football field. And like they came up with so much pressure to succeed, and they did. And that's just really cool for me. So I would say those three guys, the Manning brothers and Wayne Gretzky, are the guys I'm excited for.
Yeah, I like to see the other sports guys come over and see how hard golf really is, right? You know, the Tony Romos and Aaron Rodgers or whoever else is going to play. And they're great. They're all
they
really
can't
good.
Get enough
but, yeah, golf is not an easy game. All right, Greg. Well, much appreciated, sir. That's Greg Ducharme. You can get him on Twitter, which I highly encourage, @TheRealGFD. Greg, is there a fake GFD?
Well, you never know. And when I made this account I was probably in eighth or ninth grade, I was really paranoid at that time in my life. So you didn't know what you were going to get, so I wanted to make sure that everybody knew who it really was.
I love it. And the first time I saw that, I was like, I got to ask about that.
I'm glad you did.
Like six
See,
months
look,
later.
In high school at that time, it was completely a joke. And I've been a little self-conscious about it because now that, you do a podcast, you do a radio show, there's like a little bit of, and it's not celebrity, but there's like people might wonder, is he really that pretentious? And I'm not. It was completely a joke, but I guess you just can't change it. So I'm stuck with it now and, sticking with it.
All right, the real GFD. Go find him. You can get me @RickRunGood. We will catch you next time. Best of luck this week.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.